talk about the avocado thrips. It's a serious pest of avocados here in California, and how we've used molecular markers to resolve some of the taxonomic confusion surrounding this pest and also determine the origin of the invasive California population. Now, the avocado industry in California is worth about $300 million a year, and until relatively recently, it was pretty much pest and disease free. But this changed at the end of the 20th century with the introduction first in 1990 of the Persea mite, and then the avocado thrips, which was first detected attacking avocados in July of 1996 at two distinct points around Port Hueneme in Ventura County and some 100 or so miles further south around Irvine in Orange County. And free from natural enemies in California, this thrip spread very quickly, and by 2003 almost all avocado groves in California were infested with this pest to some degree. It outbreaks in early spring, and feeding by the thrips importantly damages young developing fruit, which results in scarring of the fruit and downgrading of that fruit in the packing house. And long-term estimates for the thrips predict that it costs the California avocado industry somewhere between $4.5 and $8.5 million per year. Industry estimates for 2006, for the single year, which was a particularly good year for the thrips, put that figure at $60 million. So it's a serious economic pest. Now, when it was first detected in California, it was a new species. It was described and given the name Skirt Thrips Persei. And since then, its home range has been defined as the avocado growing region stretching from central Mexico down through into central Guatemala. Within this region, it occurs in isolated patches, only on avocados growing at altitudes greater than 1,500 metres. Now, the question is, how did it jump from there to here? Well, we know that it's monophagous, and studies at UC Riverside have also shown that it has a fundamental requirement for living avocado leaves in order to feed and reproduce. Importantly, it cannot survive on the mature fruit, which is a commodity which is commonly imported both legally and illegally into the state. So it must have come here on avocado plants. Now, the importation of plants into California is rightly strictly regulated, but there also exists long waiting lists in California for avocado plants with which to start new groves. And so we would believe that this creates a black market, or a potential black market, for smuggled avocado plants. And therefore we believe that the only way a viable founding population of avocado thrips could have established in California is from infested plant material, or plants, smuggled in from somewhere in its native range. Now, in case you're wondering why we want to, I mean, its native range looks fairly small in the first place, so in case you're wondering why we want to further resolve its origin, well, it's important for two particular reasons, and I'm sure many more as well. Firstly, as I mentioned previously, in California there's no effective natural enemies for this pest. That's why it does so well. And so identifying the origin of the pest as part of an integrated pest management program will help us focus our search for natural predators, parasitoids of this species. And secondly, it may also put us in a better position to intercept future imports, not only of this pest but of other pests as well. The arrival in California of Skirt Thrips Persei was preceded, as I mentioned previously, by the Persea mite in 1990, an equally injurious pest. And prior to that, a slightly less injurious pest, the red-banded whitefly, in 1982. Now, both of these species bear remarkable similarities to the avocado thrips. Like the thrips, they both have a fundamental requirement for avocado leaves in which to feed and reproduce. And like the thrips, they've both subsequently been found to be native to Mexico. And so by identifying the origin of the avocado thrips, we may actually be also uncovering a key pathway of invasion for pests of avocado into California. Okay, at the outset of this research, we had one further problem that we needed to tackle, and that was to answer the question as to whether what we were calling Scirtothrips persei was in fact a single species or some kind of species complex. And this confusion was brought about largely by a controversial review of the genus in Mexico, which listed 7 species from avocado, and 5 of these were newly described. These descriptions were based on characters which are known to be highly variable within this group, within recognized species within this group, and also made from poorly prepared specimens. So the first thing we wanted to tackle really was we wanted to answer the question of, are we working with a single species? How do we go about this? Well, in the first spring following its detection in California, there was a coordinated collecting effort in Ventura and Orange County groves to collect specimens of avocado thrips, and this material was in storage at UCR. We supplemented this material with an extensive collection of specimens throughout discrete geographical areas through the native range of the pest, collected during 2002 to 2004, and also a further collection of material from groves throughout California, again in 2004. And we took these specimens and we extracted some DNA, and we use a particular extraction technique which preserves the specimen, which can then be retrieved from your extraction, cleared and slide mounted. So every specimen in this study for which we have molecular data, we also have the morphological data should we wish to go back to it. So the first thing we looked at, in an attempt to clear up some of the taxonomic confusion surrounding the pest and also perhaps identify some larger scale population differentiation, were some relatively conserved markers. In particular, we looked at the ITS1, ITS2 and 28SD2 regions of nuclear ribosomal RNA and also the CO1 region of mitochondrial DNA. And the nuclear ribosomal sequences suggested that what we were collecting was indeed a single species. 28SD2 sequences were identical for every specimen we sequenced, right throughout California and its native range. And while showing a small amount of variation, which is typical of the ITS regions, ITS1 and ITS2 were also very similar. And the two gel pictures here, on the left, we have, this is the ITS1 product and the ITS2 product, and you can see that right across the range of the pest, there's no variation in the size of these products. And this varies, to compare that with the same regions in other species of Scirtothrips, you can see that there are clear differences there. We've actually developed these interspecific differences as part of a molecular key to several species of several pest species of Scirtothrips. Okay, so the nuclear ribosomal sequences suggested that we were dealing with a single species. In contrast, our mitochondrial DNA actually revealed the existence of 3 distinct and highly divergent haplotype groups. What we have here is a haplotype network constructed from approximately 660 base pairs of the CO1 gene of 47 specimens. Each bubble represents a particular haplotype. The size of the bubble is indicative of how many individuals shared that particular haplotype, and the lines connecting the bubbles, or at least the numbers by the lines, show the differences in terms of the number of nucleotide substitutions between the haplotypes. And in group one, this group at the top, we found all our specimens from California fell into this group, plus all the specimens from populations in the center of the native range of this pest. And no two haplotypes in this group vary from each other by more than three base pairs. In contrast, group two, which contained only specimens from the northern reaches of the native range, and group three, which contained only specimens from the southern reaches of the native range, differed from group one by more than 50 base pairs, and from each other by more than 30 base pairs. That's about 8% sequence divergence. Now, whether this is enough to call them different species, we simply don't know. And I think that can only really be answered by someone, probably in Mexico, undertaking mating compatibility trials between these three haplotypes. But importantly for this project, we were able to rule out material from these two regions as potential sources of the Californian population, leaving only four potential source populations as the source of the California population, all in Mexico. Those at Puebla, Coatepec Arenas, Chalapa de Diez, and Huapam. Now, within this region, there still remains a degree of population isolation, and so we looked for further population differentiation using some highly polymorphic markers, microsatellites. And one of the problems with working with microsatellites is you don't typically know what you're going to get until you look for them. And unfortunately, we were only able to look at four microsatellites. It appears that some species are just poorer in at least good polymorphic loci than others, and I guess we got unlucky. But we were able to consider these four loci, allele frequencies in these four loci, in seven population samples. Three from California, our own collection in 2004, and the original collections in Ventura County and Orange County in 1997, and then the four native populations from Mexico, Chalapa de Diez, Coatepec Arenas, Huapam, and Puebla. I apologize for this slide and the next three. It's quite difficult to put this into any other format. So we had four loci. Thankfully, there was no evidence for linkage between these loci, so we were able to assume they were independent. And of the two locus population combinations, only two showed significant deviation from Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium. But with that in mind, our subsequent analyses do not assume Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium. Okay, so here we have two commonly used measures of population differentiation. Pairwise estimates of FST above the diagonal and Nye's unbiased genetic distances below the diagonal. Essentially, these yield values between 0 and 1, with 0 being no differentiation, 1 being complete differentiation. The first thing to take from this slide is the similarity of our California samples. In particular, the similarity between the original samples from Orange County and Ventura County in 1997. That's this value here. This is not significantly different from zero, and essentially we can apply from that the invading populations in those two, at the two focal points of the invasion, originated from a single invasion event. They came from the same place, most likely at the same time. Furthermore, the similarity between the original 97 collections and our own 04 collection. Again, this value is not significantly different from zero, and this is only marginally non-significant. Again, this implies that no further importations of this pest have taken place between 97 and 04, or if they have, they certainly haven't established. And the second thing to take from this table is the similarity, or the relative similarity, between our California samples and those from the native population in Coatepecoranus in Mexico. To put it simply, our California samples are more similar to the Coatepecoranus sample than they are to the other four, to any of the other three native populations. And this was also reflected in the results of an assignment test. This analysis looks at multi-locus genotypes in the invading population, and based on allele, on microsatellite allele frequencies in each of the native populations, it calculates the probability that each invading genotype could have come from each of the native populations. And in an ideal world where we had 20 or so microsatellites, we would hopefully be able to unambiguously assign each invading genotype to a single source population. But with four microsatellite loci, we were unable to do this. And so what we have here, we assigned individuals to the native population which had the highest probability score. And we have actual numbers of individuals that are assigned to each native population from Ventura and Orange counties, and then the combined. And in brackets following these whole numbers, we have the mean probability that any given invading genotype would be assigned to each of the native populations. And we found that invading genotypes were significantly more likely to be assigned to Coatepecoranus than any of the other three native populations. So this, it appears that the California population of Scirtophrips persei most likely arrived from Coatepecoranus in Mexico. Now this is quite interesting because lo and behold, Coatepecoranus is actually the site of a large avocado breeding and germplasm station. And as such, it's more likely to attract foreign visitors perhaps than the other three native areas that were sampled, which are relatively speaking more remote. And this is one of the PIs collecting thrips from an experimental variety in Coatepecoranus. So one last thing we wanted to do was we also wanted to try and get a feel for the size of the invading population. And to do this, we estimated the effective population size for the invading population. Now this looks at allele frequencies before and after an invasion event or a bottleneck. Now we rather assumed that there was a bottleneck based on our historic knowledge of the invasion. We weren't able to actually statistically show the bottleneck, but again this is down largely to the fact that we only had four loci. Typically, yes, I think they suggest you require 20 or more loci to show the, or certainly 10 or more, to show the existence of a bottleneck. So we assumed that it was a bottleneck. We also assumed that in the time between its first detection and the time at which the sample was taken, based on climate data and thrips developmental times, we assumed that at least 10 generations had passed from the invasion to the time of sampling. And our last assumption was that the microsatellite allele frequencies for our Coatepecoranus sample were representative of the pre-invasion population from 1996. This may or may not be the case, but it's the best estimate that we have. And this yielded a mean effective population over 10 generations of 65. I should say that 65 is actually that estimate is of genetically distinguishable reproducing females. So it's not the total population size. Now, typically these estimates are smaller than the actual effective population size, but given that this is a mean over 10 generations, and we also know that during this period the population was undergoing rapid expansion, we can at least infer from this that the actual number of thrips that came into California and instigated the invasion of California was indeed small. And as a result, we suspect that the amount of avocado plant material that came into California was also small, perhaps only a branch or two. A single avocado leaf can contain 20 to 30 avocado thrips legs, eggs, possibly legs as well. Okay, if you'll just indulge me for a minute, I just want you to imagine this scenario. So a visitor to Quatapecorhynnus, perhaps a grower or a researcher, sees a particular variety of avocado that he thinks would do well in California. And so he takes a few cuttings, he breaks off a branch or two. Now he may be vigilant enough to actually check those branches or his cuttings for signs of pests. But avocado thrips lay their eggs into the underside of leaves. They're very hard to see and they're very hard to remove. So he takes his cuttings and he puts them in a Ziploc bag to retain the moisture in them. And he then packs those his cuttings into his suitcase. And he flies back to California. 24 hours later, he grafts those same cuttings onto existing rootstock in Ventura County and Orange County. Thrips larvae emerge from eggs hidden in the leaves. They throw themselves a little welcoming party, and 10 years later, that one selfish act costs the avocado industry in California $60 million. Now, this is only one possible sequence and perhaps fanciful sequence of events, but what I hope to have shown today is the usefulness of molecular markers in resolving taxonomic disputes, identifying the potential origin of these exotic pests, and also for reconstructing pathways of invasion. It looks like Skirtothrips persei is probably a single species. I should say that the morphology backs up the our nuclear ribosomal sequences. Again, it will require mating compatibility trials between these mitochondrial groups to confirm this. It also looks like the California population of the avocado thrips most likely arrived from Quatapecorhynnus in Mexico. It probably came the two invasion points in Ventura County and Orange County probably were part of the same invasion. By identifying Quatapecorhynnus, we can now search there for natural enemies. And furthermore, we can be extra vigilant about further material coming from that area because it may be a hot spot for pests coming into the Californian avocado industry. With that, I'd just like to thank some of the people who worked on this project, Richard and Mark, the two PIs on this project, for inviting me to come and work in California. Phil Phillips, who alongside Mark Hoddle collected all the thrips for this project, and finally the two funding bodies for the project, the UC Exotic and Invasive Pests and Diseases Research Program and the California Avocado Commission. Thank you.